This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. This week on the Compass, local activists rise to meet the threat of a sevenfold increase in oil tanker traffic on the Salish Sea. KPTZ reporter Jack McCorney covers a Port Townsend protest of President Trump's threats to the Dreamers Act. And then we revisit a program from late last year about the Ecumenical Helping Hands organization, which provides everything from wheelchairs to free chauffeur services for the handicapped in Jefferson County. So now let's go inside the Compass. Last winter, KPTZ Compass dedicated several episodes to coverage of the passionate local support provided to the ultimately unsuccessful efforts of the Lakota Sioux and other indigenous peoples to halt the progress of the Dakota Access oil pipeline across Sioux lands and water in North Dakota. Shortly after taking office, President Donald Trump reversed the Obama administration's call for more intensive environmental review of that project and pushed the pipeline through. Now a new threat of the same nature is looming much closer at hand, and local forces are once again mobilizing to meet it head-on. Kinder Morgan, the corporation behind the proposed Trans Mountain Pipeline expansion in Canada, and known for its track record of lawbreaking, pollution, and cover-ups, is now eyeing expansion opportunities in Whatcom and Skagit counties in Washington state. According to the Sightline Institute's website, its oil transport ambitions could increase oil tanker traffic in the region by 7 times and directly threaten the Salish Sea and Puget Sound. To fight the pipeline, a cross-border coalition of environmental, indigenous, and social justice groups has formed under the name Pull Together. And this week, Olympic Climate Action, the Sierra Club, and the Native Connections Group of the Unitarian Universalist Church in Port Townsend will host 2 events in Chimicum and Port Angeles to discuss the hazards of the proposed Kinder Morgan pipeline expansion in British Columbia. The first event will take place on the evening of Tuesday, August 22nd, from 6 to 9 p.m. at Finn River Farm and Cidery, located at 124 Center Road in Chimicum. The second will take place the following evening, Wednesday, August 23rd, at the Elwak Klallam Heritage Center located at 401 East 1st Street in Port Angeles, also from 6 to 9 p.m. in the evening. Sightline Institute's Policy Director Eric DePlace will be the keynote speaker at both events and discuss the risks Northwest fossil fuel proposals pose to our region. Other speakers will address threats to Indigenous rights and sovereignty and opportunities for individual action. This is Steve Evans reporting for KPTZ Community Radio News.
Just, the word on this was put out by the National Indivisible Group.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And the whole idea is to support the fact that we have the Dreamers, and they need to stay. It wasn't their fault they were brought into the country. And the law did exist. And Trump is looking at getting rid of it. So our purpose out here today is to support it. And we are the PT Indivisible Group here in Port Townsend. So there's, I don't know if you know this, but there are 6,000 indivisible groups all over the country.
You just heard Debbie Steele, the chair of Port Townsend's own Indivisible Group, who last Tuesday planned a support rally for the federal government's deferred action policy, which was created by President Obama in June of 2012. The young people who may apply for the program are administratively referred to as the Dreamers. These are immigrants who came to the U.S. before the age of 16 and who lack lawful immigration status. An intriguing set of criteria for the program also include being enrolled in high school or the recipient of a GED program, according to the United We Dream website. This means some of the hardest working, underage immigrants in the U.S. cannot apply for this program. However, and with that in mind, the Washington Times reported, quote, nearly 800,000 young adult illegal immigrants have been protected by the program, giving them a chance to get driver's licenses, legally hold a job, collect tax benefits, even to earn a law license, or in some special cases, to join the U.S. military. So why the protest? Anxiety. I interviewed Dee Weber and Joe Tissel about why they support the DACA policy.
Well, I honestly believe that these young people belong in the United States, and I really want them to be here because they contribute so much to our economy and so much to our culture. And let them stay.
It takes a fair amount to be out here standing in the sun and waving and laughing and carrying signs and stuff. But you don't have to be angry to do it. You can be hopeful with a fair amount of anxiety because of the way things are going. So there's a lot of reason to be anxious out here. Not so much that I fear for the American people, but because I think the vast, vast majority of the response to what's been happening has been very positive, and it's really pulled a lot of people together. But the forces arrayed against democracy and love and compassion and common sense, they're very powerful because of the money they have behind them. You know, we don't have that kind of money, so we just have to come out here and do what we have to do to make our voices heard. We can't buy the media. We can't buy congressmen and senators outright, so we have to be out here to use our voices. And if we don't use our voices, we will, I think, lose that platform to be able to use our voices in the near future the way things are going. But if people stand together and make themselves heard and remind everyone, ourselves included, that we're here for democracy and compassion and the long-term health of the country, then we can prevail.
I also spoke with Kate Franco about her history in immigration rights and how she came to care about the DACA policy.
I've been in Port Townsend for 12 years, and there were three of us back in 2007 and 8 when there were there were checkpoints and raids and border patrol out at Head Start and the Catholic Church and Fat Schmitty's and on the buses. And so we did some things then, which we've also done here now, is Know Your Rights. Lawyers to come and talk about rights and what people can do, such as stay silent and things like that. And so back then there were three of us who formed a group called Border Patrol Free.
And what were the names of the people?
Libby Palmer, myself, Kate Franco, and Jim Buckley. And then this year, immediately, within a few days after the election on November 8th, before November 15th, Libby and I had already visited the city council and the county board and talked and asked, what are we going to do? What are you going to do? And so that got the whole city resolution of the welcoming city going, because then it took off. A lot more people started getting involved. And then, you know, with the county board, they came up with a proclamation also. And that's been very helpful for the immigrants to know that there are people here who support. So there are a lot of young people, for DACA, the Dreamers, those are people who were brought here as babies, as very young kids, and have really don't know anything besides the U.S. They don't have any memory of Mexico or Guatemala, and they live here, they've gone to school here, but they weren't born here. And to send them away would just be criminal. It makes me cry to think about it.
Danielle Franco, Jorge Lopez, and their two small children came to visit Danielle's mother in Port Townsend this summer, and they were one of only two families with children that I saw at the protest. Danielle and Jorge live most of the year in Mexico, and the children hold dual citizenship.
Well, it's very tricky because, in my opinion, it's still the greatest country in the world and could still very well be, but it's very founded on immigrants. Come here with a different perspective, you know, because they haven't seen what the U.S. has to offer. And then they come and they're marveled by it, and then they want to contribute to, and, you know. So it's very interesting that we can use some fears that we have. What is actually made this country the best, huh? The immigrants, and I think that's the most difficult part.
Reporting for KPTZ 91.9 Community Radio News, this is Jack Picorni.
morning, Echo. Yes, we do. Oh, you don't even need a prescription. What is it that you need? Four-wheel walker, do you need one with a seat or without? Okay. We have plenty of them available. How tall is Walter? So we'll adjust it to fit his height and have it ready for you if you want to come up. And there's somebody here until 4 o'clock today. And I'm here 9 to 4 tomorrow. No. There's no charge. It's a free loan program. Yeah. Thank you. All right. We'll look forward to seeing you. Thank you. Bye.
Every day, the Ecumenical Christian Helping Hands organization, better known by its acronym ECHO, receives a dozen or more phone calls like this one from people in crisis with escalating health problems at home and a newfound need for expensive equipment like wheelchairs, lifts, walkers, commodes, and hospital beds, along with help to get to doctor's appointments and with everyday tasks like cooking, cleaning, weeding, or just plain companionship. And like this caller, those people are, as often as not, astonished to find that they can get the equipment and services they need absolutely for free. Over the nearly two decades of its existence, ECHO has won multiple awards for the unique service it provides to the communities of Eastern Jefferson County. Having heard that the 18-year-old nonprofit was going through a period of transition and need of its own, with former executive director Ken Dane departing for personal reasons and being replaced by board member Sarah McMahon on an interim basis, I stopped by one recent morning at its medical equipment jammed headquarters in the former rectory of the First Presbyterian Church, which lets the building to the non-denominational ECHO for only the cost of utilities, to find McMahon meeting with the organization's new volunteer coordinator Cassie Reeves and operations manager Rich Heitman to work on a grant application. The three gracefully suffered my interruption and granted me a brief group interview. I started by asking McMahon about the history of the organization.
It started 20 years ago with a particular group of people called Stephen Ministries at the Presbyterian Church next door. There was one particular couple who saw the need. There are a lot of older people here in Jefferson County, and the demographics indicate that we are the oldest county in Washington State, actually. Anyway, they saw the need with old people who were needing things, and a lot of people can't afford to buy. Why should they have to, or why should their insurance have to buy brand new wheelchairs, for example, which are very expensive, lift chairs, let alone the typical things like commodes and walkers. We have several kinds of walkers, canes and crutches, and just about anything, hospital beds.
All of which is donated to us.
It's actually an impressive collection. I mean, like, looks like the whole, like, is this a former house here?
Seen the basement. Yeah, the basement is very full of stuff, too. And so given the demographics of Jefferson County, we have more than 5,000 households with people over 65, or in this county, 42% of households. And our median age here in Jefferson County is 55.1 years. And ECHO serves a median age of 71. Last year, we worked with people from age 1 to 101.
Wow.
Yeah.
From age 1. Yeah. So you have stuff here for infants.
It could have been a ride. Yeah, we take people to medical appointments in Seattle, Silverdale, Poulsbo, Squim, and Port Angeles.
As well as locally.
Yeah, and then the remarkable thing to me is that we have volunteers who are willing to drive people every single day for 2 weeks to Silverdale or Poulsbo for chemotherapy and or radiation.
And about how many drivers are there?
We have a total of 75 volunteers, and I just heard the other day that 95% of them are drivers.
Yes. Yeah. What other kinds of things do the volunteers do?
Just, Cassie, do you want to answer that?
I can. We have volunteers that actually come in here in the office and help clean the equipment when it's returned. We have volunteers that come in and help us do mailings. We have a few volunteers that help with household chores and yard work. I am hoping to launch some kind of a volunteer program for friendly visitors, for people that are just home alone and just need a companion to spend time with them. And also we have a lot of people that are actually caring for elderly parents, and the people themselves are now reaching the point where they are seniors and they have their own medical appointments and cannot leave mom or dad home alone. So I'm hoping we can kind of branch into that a little bit more.
But that's not currently a service you've
been
providing?
We're doing it a little bit, but we haven't really accelerated that program. We kind of want to push that one a little bit further, because we have a few of our drivers who are kind of not wanting to drive after dark, not wanting to drive as far or as often. And so I'm hoping we can maybe enlist those folks to be visitors for people that are shut-ins.
The way I actually got onto this story was I was at the Ministerial Association meeting several weeks ago when Sarah, you came in and you were actually asking for help. And one of the things that interested me was you said that quite a few of your volunteers are quite elderly themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have a person who's 94 and a person who's almost 91. I will tell you, the person who's almost 91 is a beautiful woman named Kay Goodhue. And gratis a drunk driver hitting us head on in 1989, I have some significant upper spinal damage. And I had a crisis year before last in the wintertime, well, it's early spring. And the former volunteer coordinator here was a friend of mine named Marlena. And she called me one day and she said, Sarah, I think I have someone who would like to help you with your yard work. And Kay came. And she's still my landscaper at almost 91. Wow. And she does remarkable things. The one story I will share with you is that one day she said, she's a little, just goes like crazy, very petite, tiny little thing. And she said, Sarah, do you have a ladder? And I said, well, yeah, it's in the garage, in the front part of the garage. And she said, well, I'm going to go get it. And she got the ladder out and she set it up. It's a 6-foot ladder. And she said, I'm going to cut off that branch up there. Fine. So she has a long-handled lopper tool thing. And she didn't climb to the top step of the ladder. She climed to the top of the ladder. And she said,
Aren't there signs on the ladder saying you're not supposed to do
probably,
that?
Probably, yeah. And so I'm holding it like shakily, you know, and it's in very soft earth, and I'm praying. And she goes up there, and she reaches up full length with her loppers, and she goes like that, and the branch falls down. And so a little bit later, she was returning to her car. I thought Kay was maybe 65. She's on her way back to her car. And she said, oh, just a minute, I forgot to give you something. Came running back with this little piece of paper, and it was an invitation to her 90th birthday party. And so I have found working in this office, there's something new every day, surprises of all sorts, and these two might have other things.
So now, Rich, how long have you been here?
Oh, 6 years now.
Mm-hmm. And what brought you here?
Well, my wife and I moved from the Washington, D.C. area, and one of the things that attracted us to Port Townsend was the spirit of volunteerism that we found in the community. We were looking for volunteer opportunities. So I initially inquired to be a volunteer, but then there was actually a part-time employment opportunity available, and I jumped on it because it was perfect for what I hoped to do in the community. And it really feels good to me to be working here because of the good it does to the community. It's such an important service, and there are so many people that need it. And it's very satisfying to know that all of us here are making a real important difference in people's lives. I don't know of any other organization where you can get medical equipment as a free loan, free transportation to medical appointments or other types of transportation. It's just amazing that the service even exists. And just an amazing service that I'm not aware of any other services like it in the country. And although I'm sure there must be, but the thing that really makes Echo viable is the support of the community. It's just amazing how much support we get. And the only reason that Echo exists is because of the generosity of the community. We get donations from the hospital, kicks in some money each month. All the local churches contribute some money. Most of the money actually comes from individual donors. Small amounts from a lot of people.
There's a lot of that money. I mean, are those individuals actually people who have benefited in one way or the other from the service?
Yeah. I would say a majority of the donors are people who have benefited from their service. They're just so grateful for the important work we're doing. And a lot of these people say, you know, I wouldn't know who else to turn to. I have no way of getting around. I can't afford to rent medical equipment. And there are a lot of people who'd be in a serious bind without our free service. We don't charge for transportation. We don't charge for loans of medical equipment. But we appreciate donations because that's what makes this possible. But we never turn anybody away who say, sorry, I can't donate anything to you. Over the years, the growth has continued to happen at an exponential rate. Growth in terms of requests for service, requests for medical equipment. And now we've grown to the point where we're actually storing some equipment at an off-site storage facility.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And large pieces like hospital beds. And
so you have like fully functional hospital beds that do the electric, like raising and lifting and
Sure. Electrically operated beds. Press a button, the head goes up, the foot goes up, the entire bed goes up. That's a fully functional and fully articulated piece of equipment.
Does the organization have the truck to deliver such an item? Because that's a big, heavy thing.
It is. Our equipment manager does have a pickup truck, which he makes available for ECHO's use. And so usually he and I, or he and another fellow who's not in the office today, will deliver the heavy pieces of equipment. Hospital beds are heavy things, and people are so appreciative that not only do they not have to rent this very expensive piece of equipment, but if somebody is not able to pick it up themselves at our storage facility, we are willing to deliver it to them, set it up, and away they go. They have a fully functional hospital bed at no charge, and one of the great things about our equipment loan program is that there is no time limit. The equipment can be used as long as it's needed. And in fact, we had an elderly lady who had borrowed a wheelchair like 10 years ago. She brought it back after about 10 years and said, thank you, I'm doing much better now. I don't need the wheelchair. So it's again, it's a remarkable service, and I'm very, very proud of what ECHO does.
So, what is the organization's budget annually, Sarah?
$100,000 a year.
And that pays for a manager, the rent on this building, I guess. And
Steve, we are operating on a shoestring budget to meet our needs. Our staff is really. I consider it my allowance that I'm getting my allowance here. We're basically paid, and you know, it's been acknowledged that we're basically paid volunteer stipends for the work that we're doing. It's tough for us financially to be doing what we are doing so generously with the community on the budget that we have. It's always an issue for us.
One of the things that really impresses me about ECHO is that we're not affiliated with any particular church or denomination, but we're supported by all of them. And it's people are overcoming their differences to serve the greater good, basically, in a nutshell. That's it. So, people of all faiths, all denominations, atheists, it doesn't matter. If it's somebody who needs help, we do our best to help them.
I did want to mention, too, that we do, you know, we do minor household repairs, but if there are things that we can't do, we do work with the Boeing Blue Bills. And also, we do work with the regional transportation system. So if it's possible for someone to take a bus, then they take a bus. And we work with the paratransit people. And it's basically, I think it's my understanding that it's the people who for some reason can't participate in, people who can't ride a bus and people who perhaps don't qualify for paratransit for whom we provide transportation. But we, you know, it's a community organization. We're community oriented and we do work with other parts of the community to meet the needs of people too. We need volunteers, strangely, who live in Port Townsend. One thing that we're encountering, and I hear from volunteers, is that you might have a person from Port Townsend who needs to be driven to a medical appointment in Silverdale. Well, it more likely than not could be a volunteer who lives out on Marrowstone Island or Port Ludlow. So they drive from home into town and pick up their client, take them down to the medical appointment, bring them back to their home, and then our driver goes home. That's a lot of travel. And it surprises me that we really do need people right here in Port Townsend to meet such needs, too. And it's not all long-distance driving. You know, we help with shopping or picking up prescriptions, and there are just so many things that we do. We need more volunteers who can do yard work. Volunteers sometimes help with housework. It's my understanding they sometimes prepare meals for people. I was called once and asked to visit a woman who was living in one of our retirement facilities, and she was lonely. She had no family in the area, and I was asked if I would just call her occasionally. So I did that, and I visited her occasionally until hospice moved into her situation, and then she had a lot of people knocking at her door, so I dropped out of the picture. But that was just a wonderfully rewarding thing for me to do, and she appreciated it so much. So basically, you know, whatever it is that people feel like they can offer into the community, there are all these different needs.
Do the volunteers, like, provide their own vehicles and pay for their own gas and so on when they're, like, driving people?
They do provide their own vehicles, and we do have them fill out a safety checklist for their vehicle on a regular basis. Some request reimbursement for mileage, others do not. So it just kind of depends on the individual.
But let's suppose that somebody is wheelchair-bound and they really need to be transported in a van that can, like, carry them in their wheelchair, or is that something that you are able to deal with?
That is problematic at this time. We have volunteers with big enough vehicles that they can transfer chairs or wheelchairs, but a lot of people, the older volunteers and myself included, it's very difficult to lift that equipment and help the person. So those are a bit of a problem right now, and I don't see that changing, but I believe that might be where paratransit could come into play. So we have lots of them that go with walkers or canes or things like that, and we can usually work with that. It's a little harder when it's somebody that's wheelchair bound.
All right, so if I want to get involved, what do I do?
You just call this office.
What's that number?
The number is 379-3246.
That phone number again for the Ecumenical Christian Helping Hands Organization, or ECHO, is 379-3246. That's 379-3246. ECHO is located right next to the First Presbyterian Church at the corner of Jefferson and Polk Streets in Uptown, and is open from 9 to 4 Monday through Friday. With ECHO Interim Executive Director Sarah McMahon, Volunteer Coordinator Cassie Reeves, and Operations Manager Rich Heitman, this is Steve Evans reporting for KPTZ Community Radio News. This week's KPTZ Compass was written and produced by Jack Picorni and Steve Evans. You can listen to podcasts of past Compass programs at the kptz.org website, where you can also stream KPTZ live 24 hours a day. For the news team here at KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, I'm Steve Evans.